Hey there, this is Seth Juarez, and welcome to another edition of the Windows Community Stand-Up here with Corporate Vice President of Developer Platform Team, Kevin Gallo. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How about you?
So we met, and one of the things that I want to say before we get started is make sure you get all your questions in. This is a community stand-up. It's about you. I can ask all sorts of nerded out questions, but we really care about what you, the audience, wants to talk about. I'm watching online for questions, and we're getting them, so please get your questions in often and early, okay? It's like voting. I'm just joking. So we met about a couple of weeks ago, maybe, mm-hmm. Was it? What are some of the new things that you want to talk about at this community stand-up to tee up?
Well, the first thing is we are announcing today the second Developer Day that's happening in London on October 10th. It's happening at 5:30 p.m. in London time, or for here it's 9:30 a.m. Pacific time. And we're going to talk about, just like we did back at the first one in February, we're going to talk about all the new things coming in the new SDK, because today the SDK goes live and we have the final SDK for the Fall Creators Update. It's going to be great. We're going to get some examples of some stuff that some early adopters have done and built, and kind of like the exciting things that they've kind of are going to kind of seed into the environment, into the ecosystem, as well as talk about in more depth all the features that we've added. But before that, we actually have Ignite, which is an enterprise focused, mainly focused on IT and developers for the enterprise. That's happening in Orlando on September 25th. And it's going to really focus on how we're making sure that Windows 10 and all the new features in the Fall Creators Update help our businesses move forward as they go through their digital transformation. They can modernize their applications, modernize their workflows, and make a great experience for their enterprise customers.
That's awesome. So for the London event, if someone doesn't live in London, will they be able to participate?
Yeah, we're going to stream it live. Everyone will be able to see it. It'll be a great experience. We'll have Q&A as well, and we'll have a great time to kind of talk about all the great stuff that is happening and coming out with the Fall Creators Update.
And you mentioned really quickly that the Windows 10 SDK is in preview right now, is that right? So if someone wants to download the bits and start playing with it, they can?
Yep, it's ready to go live, and so you can go start building your applications. I announced last time that it was platform complete, and now it's ready really for developers to just start pounding out great applications.
So as you know, I am a programmer nerd type, and I cut my teeth on .NET. And there's been a significant change that we talked about with .NET Standard 2.0. You mentioned there were some things about .NET Standard last time. Why don't you get us caught up on what we talked about last time and then what you want to talk about today with that?
So when we think about .NET Standard 2.0, let me just recap why it's so valuable. It really is an interoperable set of APIs across all of the .NETs, whether you're targeting WPF WinForms, or you want to migrate those applications to UWP or to Xamarin, or even if you're building your backend with ASP.NET or Linux, Windows or Linux. This is a set of APIs that you as a .NET developer can rely on always being there. We've added over 20,000 new APIs into UWP app platform so that developers can share all the packages that they have on, that they've built. And we actually have done this and built the API set from looking at all of the, NuGet packages out there and what our customers are using really across that interoperable spectrum. And so really, I want to kind of maybe give you a demo and show you just how easy it is to start now taking and modernizing your applications and moving them forward. So back at Build, Stefan and Jeannie actually did a session where they started with a WinForms application and started modernizing it. I'm going to take that similar application and show you some advancements that we've done since then with it.
I see. So just to clarify, you have a WinForms app here that you're going to modernize into a UWP app using NET Standard 2.0.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Let's see it.
So first of all, it means, here I have a solution with two things. First is in the old WinForms application.
Northwind.
Let me just go launch that and show you what that looks like. This has a standard forms over data application where I have a SQL backend and I really have a front end here visualizing through WinForms. Nobody can.
This is literally bringing me back to the days when I used my first data view on WinForms. Like, this is a nostalgic hour for me, too.
And a lot of people will feel nostalgia. Right. And some people will be like, hey, what's the next step?
Right.
So here, let me go show you just how easy it is with .NET Standard to move it forward. So here we have our data layer. Now, obviously, the UI is going to be new and modern. But the data layer, I just don't want to go make any changes.
Sure.
It works. It's great. I want to use the same back end. I can actually drag this data layer as is with no changes. Now, sometimes you may have a few tweaks you have to make to it. But here, I can just drag it directly into my Universal Windows application. Has the same exact data layer. And if you look here, you just bring up some files here. Actually, let me get that launching here and show you it running. So let me launch it. But as it's launching here, I'll show you that it's just using the standard namespace MySQL client, one of the 20,000 APIs that we've added into UWP. Mm-hmm. So now this code just works seamlessly with no extra changes that it had to make. Like I said, not everything will be there, but it's most everything. We've seen a huge amount of code resharing and code reuse. It just makes it so much easier to go along that modernization
journey. And so one of the cool things that I remember as this is loading up, and sorry, the .NET standard 2.0 included a lot of the older stuff like data sets and those kinds of things. And so now you're saying, well, this UWP we're pushing into .NET standard 2.0, that's it, so we're going to have those APIs.
All of those APIs are now there, will be .NET standard 2.0 compliant. So you see here, it's the same thing, it's a forms over data, but it's been modernized. So here's the main view where I can scroll along that view. I can also go to the orders and show you how I've actually used some of the Telera controls. Uh-huh. If anybody remembers, we announced back in February at the Developer Days that we were bringing the Telera controls into the open source so you can use them inside of your UWPs, mainly for these type of scenarios. So here, same thing, I can go in my form here, this is a data form, and fill it in. I have my day picker. I can get charts here, and I can just change my filtering quite easily. Okay, I add my dates back. And so I can go use all of these great Telera controls with .NET Standard 2.0, migrate and modernize that WinForms application to be a UWP with great UX, great fluidity, and all the great, nice things that happen in modern platforms, a nice user experience.
And that's kind of cool because when I used to build, I'm a WinForms junkie, okay? The stuff is really cool. And moving forward, it seemed like there was going to be a lot of work to do. But now with .NET Standard 2.0, anytime I built WinForms stuff, I had my data layer in a separate assembly. And that assembly, you're telling me, will just move right over. You're just changing sort of the facade of it.
Exactly. And that's a lot of what people want to do. They just want to get a fresh look. They want to make sure it works with touch, make sure it works with ink, make sure it works really with all the new modern devices and larger screens, smaller screens, and all of that we do with our new UI. But nobody wants to change the data layer, which worked perfectly fine.
Sure.
Now you just keep the data layer and you can refresh the UI. And really, we're giving you now a new set of toolkit with these new controls from Telera that make it easy to replace those forms over data experiences.
And that's amazing. So what you're saying then is the path forward if you want to modernize your app and get the wonderful store experience, where things are vetted and where you can get paid and where things get deployed really, really nicely. If you want to move forward and you have your WinForms app, because of .NET Standard 2.0, a lot of the APIs that you were used to having will now also be available in UWP, which means that you can move stuff over.
Yep.
That's awesome. And so if I'm going to do this, do I build a new UWP application with just the facade and then just start adding references to the other stuff and it should work?
Actually, I tend to do it the opposite way.
Okay.
I would probably, and everybody does it their own way,
sure,
which is create a new project. If you notice here, I had a single solution with both and I was able to, I'll just stop that. So my solution comes up. And I just had two solutions, and I just dragged. You could actually have built a shared one, so you can actually have both of them running at the same time.
Sure.
And comparing the features, I could have created a shared portable library and shared that between the two. So there's a couple of different options that developers have as they do that migration and move their code over.
I mean, that's pretty cool, because there's some things about a modern app that you just, like for example, if I wanted to do touch on a old app, it's kind of hard, right? Because there's a lot of interactions that you're just not going to get,
Yeah, you're not going to get any of that beautiful flying UI with transparency and touch. WinForms is not capable of doing that.
All right.
Modern UI can.
So for .NET Standard 2.0 then, UWP is completely .NET Standard 2.0 compliant.
Absolutely.
And as of when? Like if I were to go and create an application now, what am I going to experience?
It all is, and with the Fall Creators Update,
okay,
it's completely supported.
Fantastic. All right. So, by the way, please get your questions rolling in. Love questions about this. I wanted to move on to something else because one of the other things, speaking about what you're not going to get with a standard sort of WinForms application, is this notion of ink, mm-hmm, right? We are moving into an environment where interactions with devices is becoming less computer centric and more people centric. I mean, that's what I'm feeling like.
Absolutely.
Like with you're talking to devices now with Cortana on Windows. Hey, what's going on? The other thing that's natural is writing, and I love the inking, and it feels really good. But as a developer, I'm a little hesitant to use it because I'm afraid that it's gonna be hard. So what do you have on the inking?
So to riff on that a little bit, I think the main thing to look at when we look at new input types is I'm a little bit into neuroscience, mm-hmm, and if you know anything about our senses, they're pretty dumb, and our brain is actually what lights it all up. So we really want to make sure that as we build these new input types, we light up the experiences with intelligence behind them.
I see.
And so I want to show you some of the stuff we've done in ink to show you how that intelligence just makes you as an individual more productive and really optimizes it to help you do your job without having to be perfect at using the pen.
I see.
So the first thing is, we want to make sure that, you know, the first thing we do is make sure the experience was great. We've talked about this back at Build, but I want to demo to you is where you never have to put down your pen. Your pen works as a first-class input type. So as an example here, grab my pen, I can do the start menu. In the past, when you wanted to, you know, in essence, scroll the list, it didn't. You get select, and yet I want to use my pen to scroll. How do I scroll? So now we've simply made a bunch of gestures with pen just act intuitively and natural. So across the UX, it works. Let me show you another one here with Cortana. So if I want to do a search, I can click here, and then I want to go be able to write. Let me just see if I can launch Visual Studio. Oh, I mistyped it.
Oh,
let me show you this great feature here. I can just cross that out, and it's gone. So let me go write that correctly. I do Visual. I go, and it instantly does a search. It found this, you know, installer, found a few other things. I can just use my pen to just type in what I want to go search. I can do it in my start menu. It all just works.
And this is all integrated into Windows.
This is all in the Fall Creators Update, so you don't ever have to put down your pen. Because one of the things we find out is once users put the pen down, sometimes they don't pick it up as much, even if they love it. So we want to make it so that they never have to put it down in any of their actions, and it just can always be right there at their fingertips. So as developers build apps, they can know that an end user will have the pen with them when they're doing the shell interaction or when they're doing the app interaction. And we've just made our default controls. So you put our text control, you get all of that great inking into your controls, all just working naturally with no effort from the developer.
And that's to me really cool, because one of the things that I've found, and I'm loving what I'm seeing, is like there are certain times where I have to do computing, like I'm on a bus or a train or I'm on a plane going somewhere. And when I whip out the tablet experience, right? And then all of a sudden, I got to take the keyboard out and do something.
Yeah,
it's kind of frustrating.
Yep.
And so you're saying that a lot of work has been done in making sure that if you're going to use the pen, we're okay. Use the pen the whole time.
You're in that seat. You flip back the keyboard or you put it up and you can just use your pen. Never have to go back to that keyboard.
And so I saw some interesting things. The first thing I saw was this pen thing at the bottom. That's, you can literally write in there and it will recognize it.
Yep. And actually, there's a nice thing where if it's in tablet mode, it automatically pops up knowing that you want to use the pen. I have my keyboard here because I'm doing both keyboard and pen, and so I can pick between the two. But the nice thing about input is, if you notice between you, I'm using my hands because I'm Italian, I can't help it. I'm looking at you. We use all sorts of our input senses to go and achieve our goals, and that's one of the things about being user-centric. We want to make sure you can type when you want to, you can use the mouse, you can use the pen. All of them work correctly whenever you choose to, because you can choose what to be most productive for whatever task you're trying to accomplish. So the next thing I wanted to show you was some of the features we've added for developers to light up now that you'll be using your pen more.
Yeah.
You can go use it and leverage it, and it's mainly around ink recognition.
And that was my next question, right? Because like you make it look nice in the OS, but like if it's just little old me trying to write this app, I don't have all these engineers working on Windows that are going to be like, hey, Seth, let me hook that up for you.
And you don't have experts on ink.
Right.
We have lots of experts on ink, and we really want to make sure that we provide the right toolkit that's simple to go in build into your application. So first thing everybody tells me is, I've always told everybody it's two lines of XAML to basically get going with ink in your application. So let's show you what those, let's hop over here to my ink project. And here I'll have right here in my XAML, there's two lines. You put an ink canvas. This is where all the strokes get entered. We do all the heavy lifting in there for the strokes. And then here's the ink toolbar, which provides you the tips to be able to change it to whether a highlighter and change colors. All of that with two lines, and all I do is basically say this toolbar is modifying this canvas. In case you wanted to have two, you can have multiple. We make it really easy. And so let me just launch this application here and show it to you. So you can see here, I can very easily, just go and draw different things. I can change my tip. But let me show you some of the cool features that we've added, which is I can draw a diamond shape, and it magically made it more beautiful. I can draw an ellipse, and it made it more beautiful. And it kept all the types of stroking and the pen tip that I was using.
And that's the kind of thing that I need, right? Because when I write stuff, I need people to make it look more, look at this. This is my ugly writing, okay? But now with Windows, I can look like I'm a genius at writing.
Yep, and as well as shape recognition. So as you do simple things like in students with math, they're gonna go draw shapes. We can now make those shapes correct and fix them. Because again, nobody's handwriting is great. Mine's guaranteed worse than yours. So let me hop in and show you.
Let's do it.
Just how easy it was for me to go add this code. So let me hop over here to my code. The first thing here and is standard code here is to hook up all the strokes so that I can go and basically just wires together getting all the strokes so I can get them in a batch. And then what I've done is I set up a timer. If you notice when I would draw, after a few seconds, then it would beautify it. And that allowed me to do, you know, basically some time for drawing. Then I would beautify it. So once I do that, I go back and all we do is we do all the work of figuring out whether any new strokes were added. And if there was any strokes added, I call beautify any of the shapes that were drawn. If I had drawn multiple shapes, it would have beautified them individually. Then in beautify shapes, what I end up doing is walking through the canvas. So we go through, we analyze it. If there's handwriting, whether there's arbitrary shapes like that little squiggle that I drew, or if there's ellipses or rectangles or other known shapes. So we basically check here. If there is, in essence, any drawings that are not like handwriting, because I'm not doing handwriting beautification. We actually are looking at doing that as well. But I look here and say, okay, if it's just an arbitrary shape like that squiggle, I say, you know what? Not going to beautify that. I really don't know how to beautify. It's a free-form shape. However, if it's a circle, then I want to go, or an ellipse, then I would go and I want to go draw a more beautified version of it. And the same thing here, if it's not a circle, then I'm going to go look at it as a polygon and just go and beautify the polygon. And then in those functions, all I did was, first of all, make sure I'm using the same drawing attributes. So I wanted to keep it, you know, in the past, sometimes I've demoed this as well, but it was actually a XAML shape that we drew. It wasn't ink. This is actually real ink added back, just beautified. So I removed the old shape, I beautified and drew the new shape, and I kept all of the formatting, and it just felt natural. And so with a few lines of code, I was able to go quickly, do all this ink analysis, figure out what's a rectangle, figure out what's an ellipse, and I didn't have to do anything. All built into the platform.
Can you scroll up? Because the thing that's interesting to me here, a little bit more, I think it's like line, there it is. Line 70.
Yep.
That ink analyzer thing is really, because usually, traditionally, I'd have to go in there, I'd have to find all the pixels, I'd have to run some crazy,
algorithms
to do that. And now we have, essentially, an ink analyzer that's segmenting all the drawings.
Yep.
For you and telling you what kind of drawings they might be.
We will go through and we'll analyze it. We'll figure it out. And we're actually constantly improving this. This is something we're continually looking at and analyzing ink. So the more ink we get, the more we'll analyze it and the more we will add capability to predict it and beautify it and to figure out what the shapes are. And so we're actually adding more and more shapes all the time and we're doing handwriting as well. So the first line here is I'm going to iterate through and I can say, I could actually say, give me all the handwriting. So we'll recognize the handwriting. Or I can say, give me all the drawings. Here, I'm just beautifying drawings, but you can actually go to handwriting as well and get the actual text of what you want, what the person wrote in as well.
The thing I like about this, too, is that you're not just doing things on my behalf that I'd prefer not to. Like here, for example, there might be things that I don't want to beautify, but here I have the complete flexibility of looking at anything that's been drawn and then doing stuff with it.
And you may want to do it on a timer like I did. You may want to do it by clicking. I think last time I showed it, I was using the dial, and I was able to push on the dial, and that's what I used it. So it's the developer has the flexibility to build an experience optimized for their, for whatever task they're trying to accomplish.
And so you mentioned that it was just two lines of XAML. Can we look at those lines of XAML and then let's see if I can. So effectively, you have a canvas,
and
then you're drawing
the
on it with the ink canvas, and then the toolbar is just if you want to change the things.
And the toolbar is there. It's a standard toolbar. You can set some attributes on it. And actually doing this wiring also gives you support for the dial. So we will bind this together for the dial too. I don't have a dial with me today, but by just doing these two lines, the dial will also be hooked in there, and you can because the dial hooks in with the toolbar.
And that's pretty amazing because you may recognize because the devices that we have today are amazing in that you kind of know when the keyboard's out or you don't. You can change your entire experience based upon the modality of the user with these couple of lines of code.
Yep.
What are some of the things that you've seen built with this that you just love?
Wow, there's been just some phenomenal applications. One of the ones I think we demoed with Surface Studio was Mental Canvas, which is these guys just doing phenomenal drawing capabilities. They do some three-dimensional drawings. It's actually quite engaging the way that they can quickly go use that. Even the simple whiteboard applications that I used on my Surface Hub. I was actually showing this to my daughter and some of her friends. They were actually sitting there and like, hey, what can you do with this? And I brought it out with the ruler and the measure, and they were amazed and just what you can go do with a simple whiteboard application and just freeform. And so even simple things like that inspire creativity, inspire people to go use the device in a way that they've never thought about before, and they just create amazing experiences.
And that's really cool because my wife is a fashion designer and she sketches stuff all the time. Being able to look at stuff in smooth lines automatically and do stuff like that, I bet would be amazing.
It's stuff that's just impossible to really do. If you think about it on a real piece of paper, it's really hard. I've watched my architect do some of these things, and it's really complex and hard.
Scratch that thing out a little bit. You know?
I think this will revolutionize a lot of industries and how they can go use this new technology, and they can go add into the recognition themselves. They can go get the strokes and do some smart things themselves.
So when you're doing input with, let's just say I want to write something into my application, you would always go to the bottom as the input. Is there something you could do in-app to do that?
Yeah, it's actually when you just type into the input box, we will pop up the ability to go write automatically.
I see.
Right?
So, I see.
And we do that based on the modality. If the keyboard's attached, then we don't always pop it up.
Right.
And if the keyboard's not attached, we assume you're always going to use your pen. And you have some options as a user about what you want the automatic appearance, the automatic keyboard experience to be. And we try to do something smart, which is, you know, hey, if you know you're going to use the soft keyboard, or if you know you're going to use pen, we'll try and optimize for those experiences.
Awesome. So I promised some questions. So I'm going to go through some of the questions, make sure you keep more of the questions coming, and then I'll ask you some more questions of my own. The first one from Dave Smits, can we put already apps in the store for the FCU like MS does? I don't know what FCU, and I know MS stands for Microsoft. So the question is, can we put already apps in the store for the FCU?
Fall Creators Update.
Yeah, Fall Creators Update, yeah. Sorry, I am anti-acronyms, okay?
I don't know that the store is taking submissions yet. I don't actually know what date we'll be opening that up for submissions for the store, official submissions. So I don't actually have the date for that.
Okay, but sometime soon.
Mm-hmm.
What's the state of prognosis for XAML standard? I totally forgot about XAML standard. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so XAML standard is really very similar to .NET standard. XAML standards are a goal of making sure that you can share XAML with Windows as well as when you're building for iOS and Android applications. Now, it's not writing, you know, drawing layers. This is the ability that we have to target native controls. So you can write with XAML, and on Windows, it will come up as a native control automatically, and use the same XAML, you can go get a native experience on iOS and Android. It's really a way of bringing together what we've done with Universal XAML and UWP, and what we've done with Xamarin Forms, and allowing you to easily go share the XAML between the two. So we are working together, we've been working with the community and figuring out what is the interoperable intersection of what we're doing with Xamarin Forms and with Universal XAML, and making it so really, really easy to share it. So if you're building an app for all three, you can share your UI code just like you shared your backend or business logic or your C# code.
Awesome. And because when I looked at XAML, the hardest thing I had to understand was that XAML represents a series of objects that are going to get created.
Yes.
And so once you realize that there is an object that is a grid and it has a background and it's mapped to these properties, then you realize that XAML really can map to any types of objects.
Yep.
And then you start to think of standardizing. It makes sense.
Right. So if there's a button, there's not a whole lot of creativity in the program out of a button. And so if I want a button, you know, three buttons in a form, I may just want to write that once, especially for enterprise applications. We have this forms over data. Fairly standard form. I build it. I can specify where the buttons are in simple types, and that same UI works, and there's native controls, because you want to integrate with the native controls. You don't want to build some, you know, half-baked UI libraries on some of the other platforms. You want to go target the native ones, but share the code behind. Because what I do when I click is the same, but I don't want to go build the native behaviors.
Right.
So it gives you that kind of best of both worlds.
Makes sense. Next question from James. Are there specific versions of iOS, Android, and UWP that are supported in Net Standard 2.0?
So for UWP, it's not really a version. It's we support .NET Standard 2.0 on the Fall Creators Update. So when you build for the Fall Creators Update and you look at the API set will be .NET Standard 2.0 compliant. And if we build a portable library that's .NET Standard 2.0, that'll work in apps that run on the Fall Creators Update.
Now let me see if I understand this right, because I want to make sure that we make a clear distinction. Net Standard isn't code, it's a contract that says these are the APIs that must be available if you're Net Standard 2.0 compliant.
Yes.
And there's generally implementations of that. For example, there's .NET Core, for example, there's UWP, there's also Xamarin that does their own .NET or Mono. Those are all implementations that say we adhere to the Net Standard 2.0 contract.
And each of those are optimized for the platforms that they're running on, but with the same exact API set.
Okay.
So the code will run optimized for that platform. Usually it's in many cases natively compiled.
I see.
So when you actually go produce the code for iOS and Android, it's natively compiled. Same thing with Windows. We actually compile the .NET code down. So it's not like a little runtime. It natively runs in those platforms. And you can build a portable class library to all those APIs and get the best performance on each platform.
I see. And so the work of becoming NetStandard 2.0 compliant was effectively mapping to those contracts, because that functionality likely was already there. I mean, everyone does file I/O in almost every .NET.
Well, unfortunately, some of our APIs were different in UWP. Well, you know, and we didn't actually have as much of .NET, so we had to add a bunch of APIs in. And some of them were a little duplicate, but it allowed developers not to have to do ifs and change the code dynamically.
Like the if
we did that in the platform, optimized and tuned those, and made it really easy for developers to reuse their code.
Awesome. Okay, so that was from James. Here's another one from Jeff. So is UWP now ready for the enterprise? I know .NET Standard adds a ton of APIs. What are the ones missing?
So I don't know of too many that are missing. Like at this point, we've gotten a lot of feedback, and we're actually asking for the community to tell us, hey, have we missed anything? But we do think, you know, we are, you know, from an API set point of view, we think we're really ready for the enterprise. I think there's some ability for us to go manage the application, some migration paths, and we've done this even with the, you know, the desktop app converter, as people want to migrate their apps incrementally. We're trying to figure out, if you want to build a UWP, we think that's great. It works great with the enterprise. If you want to start migrating, there are some step, you know, click points along there that we're trying to smooth as well that we'll talk about in the future.
Awesome. And I know we talked about in Build how you can start to migrate your existing apps over incrementally. You don't have to like jump into the deep end. You can start waiting in the shallow end, get experience, get excited, and then move along as
well. And that's what we hear from the enterprise. Wholesale moving all their applications or moving, getting all of them completely UWP, it's a journey.
Right.
Developers are on this, you know, digital, you know, most, you know, enterprises in this digital transformation, trying to modernize their applications, and it's a journey and it takes multiple years. So I think we have a great endpoint. It's really these click stops that developers and the enterprise need to move along that we're trying to figure out how we make that smoother and more incremental.
Awesome. Another question that's interesting, and this is interesting only because just yesterday there was the Edge Web Summit, which had some really interesting announcements about apps in the store. Are UWP apps written in HTML, JS dead now? Is there's no more HTML/JS UWP apps?
So I think that's kind of a funny extreme statement. HTML and JavaScript are used in a huge number. I think it's 60 to 70% of the applications use it in some way, shape, or form. Some draw 80 or 90% of the pixels using it. Some draw little ads. You know, some do little add-ins, but, you know, host, you know, a shared logon UI. So it's not dead. It's a part of our ecosystem. Developers always build using multiple technologies. Sometimes they'll write some components in C#. Sometimes they'll reuse a web component from the web inside of a web view. So it's not dead. I think it's just a core. It's not like we call it out as a completely separate programming model. Instead, I sort of think developers will pick and choose the best tech for solving the problem, and therefore they can build a composite app. Part of the application can be written completely, you know, in C#. Some of it can be written in JavaScript. Some can be written in C++ to DirectX. You know, and so the developer gets to choose. They can do it any amount they want. A pure model, we still support a progressive web apps. Mm-hmm. So if you want the simple thing of just getting your website and having some projected HTML that can talk to some native Windows APIs like notifications, you can do that as well and put that in our store.
And
so
I just
lots
learned,
of options.
Yeah, I just learned recently that Teams is a progressive web app.
Yes, it is.
And is that in the Windows Store as well?
I don't think it's in the store yet, but it will be.
Yeah, and that again is written in HTML.js. So next question. Question around Surface Pen on Surface devices, not Hub. Will there ever be support for multiple pens like the Hub?
It's something we're looking at. We definitely want to support that. Some of that is a hardware thing, and some of that is software. But we definitely think that's something we'd like to go do. It's not a super high priority on a small screen. It's not clear that everybody's going to be putting down different pens. Uh-huh. So we've really looked at more of the larger format. We have two people standing at the screen, but it's definitely something we'd like to support.
Awesome. Next question. Will classic controls such as DataGrid ever have standard implementations provided by the UWP SDK, or will Telerik be our only option moving forward?
It's something we're always evaluating as far as controls. I think give us feedback about what controls you think are missing or what features you think are missing. I don't see it being one or the other, right? As far as we want to make, you know, our goal is to make sure that there is available to developers high quality implementations of the controls. And some of them we'll do in the open source, like we're working with Telerik, and some we'll do in the platform. And we'll base that on different technology options. or different requirements from customers. Sometimes we bake it into the platform so it's easier for us to move it forward because mm-hmm. We can then implement new features in it like Fluent and mm-hmm. You get them for free without having to maybe embed it into your application with an update to NuGet. Other ones, developers want to go either contribute or they want to embed them in their application for side by side as they move between two different control sets. So there's a couple different reasons we go to those different models. But we think both are very valid for providing high-quality solutions for developers.
Awesome. Next question. Will I be able to target the TPMV, Target Platform Min version, all the way up to version 10.2.40, since .NET Core Native Runtime and Framework is independent from the OS? Wow, that's a good question.
Yeah, I don't have all the numbers memorized.
I think what he's talking...
There's any feedback I tell you is I think that Min version dialog is a little complex, and I give my feedback that... Wish we didn't actually have all the build numbers in, because I can't remember all the build numbers. But besides that feedback that I constantly give my team, I don't know. Repeat the question again, so maybe I can figure
Will I be able to target the Target Platform Min version 10.2.40? 10.2.40, I think, was the not fall, but the one before that.
Right, that would have been Creators Update.
Yeah, I think 10.2.40. No, I think 10.2.40 is even earlier than the. What he's worried about is if I want to use
edition?
.NET Standard.
.NET Standard requires Fall Creators Update. .NET Standard 2.0.
I think that's
all the APIs require the Fall Creators Update, whatever build number we'll slap in there.
And awesome. And so I think what he's saying is can I use .NET Standard 2.0 with build 10.2.40? The answer is no.
No.
You have to go to the Fall Creators Update.
You'll have to be running on the Fall Creators Update in order to do that.
I think that's actually a really good question, because generally what we try to do is we try to backport all the way to the largest min version and still get some of the goodies from the stuff that's not in that version. And
right.
We got to know where we can do that. All right, next question. With Windows on ARM coming, is ARM64 support for UWP coming soon?
We have not announced support for that right now. It's something we're looking at and evaluating, but I have nothing to share right now.
I will say that to me it was amazing that I could write a UWP app, deploy it to a Raspberry Pi. I literally made a little robot that learned how to drive on its own, had a beautiful UWP interface, using actually the Template Studio that was built. Is it called Template Studio?
Yep.
I used the Template Studio to build a really good UI, and when I hooked into that my device, I saw a beautiful UI, and I knew what the robot was thinking. Yep. It was pretty crazy.
Yep.
It's the dawn of the robots. I'm excited. Next question. What's the long-term vision for UWP? In other words, I want to know if we need to invest long-term in UWP.
Long-term, UWP is where we are investing and making it great for the experience that people run on Windows and making it easy to take those experiences and bring them to other devices that join the ecosystem like iOS and Android. Sometimes people, I think, originally we were focused more on enabling some of the cross-device experiences, which we definitely want to make sure are enabled. But if you're targeting just like a great desktop app, dense UI, mouse keyboard focused, we have been adding features over the last couple of years to really make it the best of breed app, experience that you can deliver. Fluent Mint is really about moving forward and building more dense UI, complex UI for larger screens, and it works on smaller screens. But we are absolutely making UWP the destination for developers and the best way to build desktop applications and allowing you to share code and build either companion applications for phones or unique experiences for mixed reality. But everything we're doing right now, all the investment we're making in, is in UWP APIs. At the same time, we're bringing a bunch of those APIs into our Centennial customers so that they can go use those APIs as they, in essence, migrate forward from using things like user and GDI, which is not something we're bringing forward. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, we're even adding back many APIs we had in Win32 and adding them to the universal API set. So you'll see we're bringing them together more and more and enabling you to build these great desktop experiences.
And that's amazing, right? Because the trepidation when you have investments in software is, do I have to redo everything? And we're saying no, but we are investing in UWP, and it's something that, for us, looking forward, is the best option.
It is the tool we're using to create a modern platform, and we're figuring out how to bring people along that modernization journey. So we've kind of gave them the end goal mm-hmm. of a secure, trusted, high quality, battery friendly, get the fundamentals right, and get the differentiation right, and kick devices, and multi-input, kind of get a bunch of those right. Now, how do we help everyone on that journey get there in good installments, that each installment is a value and has a great return on investment for the developer?
I think an interesting thing to bring up also is that digital modernization or digital transformation requires us to stop thinking of devices as they are the focus.
Right.
We have to start thinking in terms of people. And when we do that, then we start to think of types of interactions that traditionally we do not do.
Yep.
For example, with HoloLens, for example, is a really interesting interaction, and that's also UWP.
Yep.
Or with a device like the Surface, right, where you can draw and you can do other things. Or the device like the Xbox, which I think also supports UWP.
Absolutely, yes.
And so what's happening is
all the apps you run on Xbox are all UWP. Everything on HoloLens is UWP. So all the new device types are all UWP.
And so I feel like for me as a technologist, I need to stop thinking in terms of what's my box going to look like and where are they going to click, instead to what do I want people to experience when they work with my company.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a couple new metaphors that are being introduced, especially with HoloLens, multi-user interactions. And you know, we talked about that, even having two pens, someone asked about, that's a multi-user interaction.
Right.
You really want to collaborate with people, and we both want to be doing things at the same time, multimodal. Some things we're doing with the Project Rome, where we're in essence just kind of trying to make sure that the user's data, the user's actions, they can move between their devices fluidly, and that just, everything they're doing just moves with them. If they're using an app on one, they can move to the other. So we're really trying to focus the apps, the devices and apps running on them, where the user can just grab the device that's most convenient, where they can, with the best screen that fits what they're doing, whether it's small or large, with the right type of input, and they can be productive. They can create. They can collaborate with others.
And that was awesome, because when you added devices, and I think it was activities to Microsoft Graph, that really started my thinking of, wow, I really need to stop thinking in terms of what are they seeing in this little square that I'm providing for them, instead to what do I want my users to experience overall.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. From Hank, any updates on Fluent? I really like it, but haven't seen it too much in the Insider's build, or didn't I look close enough?
There's a bunch of experiences that we are going to demonstrate and show at Developer Day. So I'd say, hey, if you want to see more, we will definitely show you more Fluent then. We see a lot of excitement. Be honest, I talk to random friends of mine who have no clue what I do other than I work for Microsoft, and they come up and they say, hey, Fluent, I heard all about this. It's awesome.
Nice.
I'm like, hey, do you know anybody that works on that?
Yeah.
You know, I guess I do. I have some friends, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but I believe it's catching on. People are getting the concept. It takes time for developers and for designers to start to integrate into their experiences, and they want to migrate their customers over incrementally. And so one of the things we're doing with Fluent is we are introducing the features in a way that move the needle, but not so much that people are uncomfortable with how much the user experience is changing. And one of the goals we have is each step in by itself is not very disruptive, but when you look where you started and a couple years later, you say, wow, I transformed my user experience while keeping my customer engaged and excited every step along the way. So you'll see it as both a revolution and an evolution. And we're trying to be very careful, because sometimes we do jarring UX changes.
Yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, things change too much. I have to relearn, especially enterprise customers.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I don't want to retrain. But if you do it over time and each one's valuable, now you've brought them along a journey and you literally have done the digital transformation or the experience transformation, almost in some ways without the user knowing it, other than they just were happy with the experience.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's like looking at pictures from my high school years. It's like, what was I thinking, you know? And like an example, when skeuomorphism came out, I thought it was the most beautiful thing ever.
Right.
But now when I look back on it, it's like, it feels a little old now. And
right.
So you're saying that we need to move the needle, but gradually, and that's what Fluent's all about.
And we're trying to balance that where we feel like we're aggressive enough in moving it, but not, in essence, doing too much churn for our developers to keep up with it.
Got it. Next question. What's the future of WPF? From Mr. V.
WPF, it's a great technology. It's not something we are evolving. What we're trying to do is make sure there's a straightforward way as we start to move and do the digital transformation to universal XAML. All of our investment with Fluid and those things are all about making sure that new XAML capability works for all the different types of experiences. That's something we haven't done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Even with WinForms, WPF was really not a complete replacement for the scenarios that WinForms did well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are really looking at making sure that universal XAML is a complete replacement on that journey, so you can build the type of experiences that you could do with Dense UI, with WPF, and with WinForms. So that's really our future. Our future is universal XAML, and putting it across all of our platforms and our input metaphors. And at the same time, we're going to make sure that there is going to be a straightforward way for our WPF and WinForm customers to move to that. And that's something we're working on. We're working on the customer feedback on what they think the right way to do that is. But we want to keep them on that journey.
That's an awesome answer. From Joseph, will there ever be a way for me to target Windows 7 with my desktop UWP applications?
No.
Yeah, and I feel like that's like asking, it's like you don't have the right pipes inside the house and you're trying to put in, it's like having a gas dryer and then trying to put it in a place that only has an electric hookup.
It really isn't possible. We're talking about a multi, I don't know how many years, 7 years, 8 years ago, maybe more, devices that were running Windows 7. And those devices, in many cases, are incapable of some of the things that the newer devices are. Mm-hmm. Think about trying to retrofit all the pen interactions. Like, you're not going to get pen, you're not going to get touch, you're not going to get a bunch of those capabilities. They just were not in the OS. And we've been tuning that stack now for years to really optimize the graphics, the input. We've rewritten the input stack, and it is now, you know, totally optimized, more secure. These things, you know, are deep, fundamental things in the OS. And, you know, I totally empathize with the desire to want some of these things down-level to Windows 7, but there's just really no technical route to go implement these features. We have transformed the OS in a fundamental way over these years, and these features just really would never function on it.
So effectively, the work of retrofitting Windows 7 will effectively make it Windows 10.
Thank you. That's probably a better articulation.
That's what I'm
articulation. Yeah. It would be Windows 10 at that point.
Yeah. And okay, that's a great answer. Okay, so next question. What are the future application program models that might be in your priority list? Like headless, console, services, drivers, Windows extensions, like in the shell, taskbar, windowing. This is an interesting question because I think he's getting to the heart of this digital transformation. If we stop thinking in terms of the box, the application box, what more should we be thinking about as well?
So if I look at that list, I'll try and pick a couple. Mods, I think, are critical. We really want to win the gaming community. It's very important for us. We want to make sure that the gaming community can participate, they can get the best. My son, who's a Minecraft fan, tells me about all the mods that he wants to go run. And he's like, well, this mod's great. Are you going to enable that? Are you going to make that possible? And so we've been thinking very deeply with a lot of our game partners. And even if you think about some of the bigger applications that have extensibility, like Office, we want to make sure that they can add a great modding or extensibility capability. And that's something critical to their business. And they want to be able to control it. In some ways, they want to know which extensions they allow and don't allow. You know, if you're going to have a tournament, I don't want every mod to be on that tournament. I want to make sure that no mods are running on that tournament, and it's therefore it has an integrity to the tournament.
That's funny, though, that you literally work all day, and then you go home, and your customers at home are like, Dad, what's up with this? And so you're getting it from both ends, I feel.
Yeah, I have a bunch of children, so I use them as a social experiment to understand how my kids might play.
So you were mentioning that you want to make sure that the people that build these games know what mods are available in tournaments. Yeah. I want you to keep...
And there's a great way to publish them through the store, and there's a monetization model, and there's, you know, a control model for quality. And so we're thinking deeply about the mods. I think a lot about AI. How in the world are we going to infuse AI into our programming model?
That's my wheelhouse,
and,
people.
You know, just making sure that it's running optimally, whether it's running locally, when it's running in the cloud, whether it's moving between the two and combining experiences from cloud and local. And so I just think AI is going to be a big transformation of how we interact with applications, a key part of the app model. And many other ones that I can't remember all the ones that were mentioned, but I do think there's just a lot of these new capabilities where you combine applications together, you add onto applications. These are where I think, just like you take hardware and you're able to take multiple pieces of hardware and combine the experience, be great. I think allowing the end user to use and interrupt their applications is another way that you'll go do that. And that's like mods, extensions, where I'm actually adding on and extending different applications or allowing sharing models, those type of things.
And even like I'm starting to think in terms of, you have an application that spans multiple different processes on multiple different kinds of devices.
Yep.
We need to stop thinking in terms of I'm running my Xe, right? And I think those days are numbered.
Right. I mean, you want the experience and you want it to leverage. I mean, Satya will talk about, you know, ambient computing or ambient intelligence or ubiquitous computing, however you want to go phrase those words. I can mix them up and they still make sense. Mm-hmm. And you really want to be able to leverage the compute power around you in the most optimal way for the user. You want the system to figure that out and to be smart about how it tunes it. I've always said, if I have a HoloLens, you know, I want to offload to the cloud the right amount of work, and I want to be able to run what's locally there the right amount because I want battery life out of it.
Sure.
Right? And so we want to be intelligent about how much processing, how we use that processing to deliver a great experience. Multi-user, I'll be honest, I think multi-user is another huge going to be a huge step forward when we allow multi-user interaction and shared experiences. And HoloLens is great where most HoloLens experiences, you want multiple people collaborating together, all sharing content, all interacting with the experience at the same time.
Awesome. Yeah, like I said, I feel like this digital transformation is very different than the ones we've had of yesteryear, where, you know, we had this cloud age, and we still are in this cloud age, obviously. But now I think we're moving into this AI age where we have to stop thinking in terms of, like, AI is going to take over the world. Instead, AI is going to augment where humans are not good. I'm terrible at counting. I'm terrible at being aware of what's happening next. But computers are very good at that, and they can help me do that in an ambient way.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, next question from James on HoloLens. Anything to discuss around shared experiences in 2D apps to see exactly the same windows and other C's in the same positions? Building an app at the moment, but there aren't APIs for window positions at the moment to build with Roam. So they're looking for a shared experience where two people on HoloLens are looking at the same thing in the same position.
It's one of the things we're looking at. Yeah. That's exactly what I just described that we're looking at, is how do we make that very, very simple? We have some early stuff in Roam called Sessions that not completely fleshed out, but it's very early. We can create these ad hoc sessions or combine, you know, more prescriptive sessions, and we're playing with it. And this is where we want end users and developers to engage with us on what's the right model. Because I'll tell you, like, that's the hardest part is what is the user going to expect? What feels natural? If you make it really hard and clunky, then nobody really wants to use it. They'll work around it.
Well, the thing that I like about Microsoft Graph that makes it innovative is now that we've allowed this sort of shared space where computing can interact with multiple devices across multiple devices, across multiple activities, and also across people. Mm-hmm. And so if you add other things to it to enable sort of sessions, like you said, or sharing or whatever, the graph is kind of the perfect model to do that.
Right. And just the idea is being, right now, whenever you have content or anything inside the graph, is attached to a user. You really want these other objects, or you want to be able to create a session object. And then it can also connect objects and data together. Mm-hmm. And then you can have multiple people collaborating on that. And, you know, you need some privacy in there. You need some multi-authoring. You need multi-view. You need multi-instance. There's a bunch of these pieces that need to be added in the platform around it to light that experience up.
So obviously you want feedback from people that are at the community stand-up.
And we are doing some early stuff. And, you know, we are going to keep looking for feedback with early adopters as we start to evolve that. But you'll see us invest very heavily in multi-user going forward.
Awesome. Next, following on from that question, you talk about amazing on desktop. Is there a vision for more features and other form factors? UWP feels a lot like desktop at the moment.
I laugh a little bit because I've been given also the feedback that UWP used to be solely associated with phones or solely associated with Xbox and non-desktop. And so in some ways you heard us, and I clearly here tried to emphasize our clear goal that UWP is also going after desktop. So we're not losing our goal of making it multi-device, but we also want to always make sure that it is the best on any single device, and you can build cross-device experiences. Because if you only build the common experience, it will never be great. So we try to achieve both of those. And those are just something we're constantly balancing. You'll see it even in our Fluent discussions, where you'll see how we are make sure that we are iconic on any device, but it feels natural as you move between devices and you know the devices are part of a family. And we review that constantly, making sure we balance these two and achieve both goals. So it's not just desktop focused, but it's also not just mobile device focused or HoloLens focused. It is trying to achieve both goals.
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, again, the most amazing thing was me running Windows on a Raspberry Pi and making apps. I mean, that changed, like, I could make kiosks now for like $50. Yep. Right? And I mean, it's pretty amazing.
And headless display, I think somebody asked about that too. We are definitely looking at making so you can build headless displays like running on the Raspberry Pi. It can run as a service on the Raspberry Pi and not even have a UX. So you can have just straight out IoT devices that have sensors that can go and send data to something that does have a UI.
And I've seen like multiple Raspberry Pis stacked like a little mini server rack. It was pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty amazing. All right, more questions from this one from Martin. Is the picture-in-picture mode coming to Xbox One UWP apps? I'd love to use it in my video app. Picture-in-picture mode.
I don't know that exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that I don't actually know that one.
We'll make sure to get back to you
on that
one.
We'll get back on
that one. From Alvin, how about migration strategy for apps with WPF WinForm interop with a little MFC thrown in?
We're looking at it. We have nothing right now in the Fall Creators Update, but one thing we're looking at for subsequent releases is how to make it easier to replace the UI on top of, say, a WPF app and make it more incremental. So you can put Universal XAML on top of, you know, what was a .NET 4.5 application. So if you had a .NET 4.5 application, you had the WinForms of WPF, how do I replace the UI, not just the business logic? Because right now you have to change the business logic first and then you change the UI as you migrate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people want to go the opposite direction and say, I want to keep my business logic. You know, I do some pinvokes, I call some libraries that are native that aren't quite, you know, or service or something that's not quite in UWP and I haven't migrated or modernized that yet. But I do want to replace the UI because I want to work on these high density displays. You know, I want to be able to get 4K displays that look great and beautiful with touch. We are looking, making it, you can do it today. You actually look at our shell, the start menu is actually completely built in Universal XAML.
Oh, wow.
And it's a, you know, built as part of the desktop experiences, and it's a, you know, in essence a Win32 application too, because part of Explorer is built into mm-hmm. it. But it's not as easy as I think enterprise developers would want it to be. They're sure. the ones who really want more of a turnkey type solution that makes it simple. So it's something we're looking at for future versions, is to really make that simpler to build.
Awesome, good question, Alvin. He said he was asking for a friend, FYI. As a new developer, should I build for UWP or Win32?
Right now, UWP targets, you know, in essence, all of our devices, gives you access to all of the capabilities that you want. And if you really need some old Win32 APIs, or you need something, some old, imagine, the main reason I tend to find that developers are building a new application sometimes need some Win32 is, hey, I'm using some middleware library that has not been modernized. Uh-huh. And it has some user and GDI code in it. What do? I can't go get that updated yet. You know, I haven't had time to, you know, kind of look at rewriting it, and the ecosystem hasn't moved it forward. What do? So even with a Centennial application, you can build a hybrid where part of it is completely UWP that can run on any device, and then you add a library or a little piece on the side that might be a Win32 library wrapper around that older code. And only on desktop it loads that. On all the other devices, it just works fine. Yeah. And then that native function, which would never have run on any device anyway, because we don't really have user and GDI on the other devices, but that gives you that interop. So it gives you kind of a hybrid application. So much like people host HTML uh-huh. inside of their application, they can, in essence, run a little bit of user and GDI inside of their application as well.
And you just wrap that, and it turns out that the only time you would ever be using that is in the scenarios where it's supported.
Yeah, and what you do is you'd submit your Centennial app, which would have both your UWP process and your Win32 process, to the store for desktop, and you can mark that for desktop only. And then for the other devices, you just take the UWP part and submit that. And it's a pretty straightforward process.
Cool beans. Next question. Why did you pick the new controls you did? Can you give a bit of background on the process?
The process is just feedback. I mean, we look at what feedback is. First, I mean, there's a couple things. One, we look internally to say what iconic experiences do we want to go build, and what are our internal customers or the shell or the first party applications that are built in Windows using. Second, what are our customers on the outside using, right? What do they need us to go build, and what's lacking in the community? Because if there's a really good community control that really has all the features and we don't think we're going to do a better job at it, hey man, the community one's great. We're just going to double down. Maybe we'll just add that to UWP toolkit, or we'll just amplify those controls. And then we go look at that what's left. Like, where's the gap? Where do we really want something that's going to be iconic, that maybe really we're going to lead with Fluent, or where we feel like we can do a better job by building it native, or building, in essence, sometimes we redo the compositing layer that gives us all these effects, and we build on top of that with our new control.
I
so
see.
We'll lead that way as maybe, you know, just kind of differentiating experience. Because we can't go update the old one sometimes out in the community, so we'll just build a custom new one. So we look at all that data, and then we pick controls and we go.
So it's not like there's some dark corner somewhere in building 90-something where some dude is just randomly
is a dark corner somewhere over there where they decided. Nice. But this is the little piece of paper they're looking at when they make the decision.
Nice. From Rama, I love Microsoft. I know what you're doing. Users are complaining, even devs, because they feel UWP is not so mature, which is... And why? So they are asking, like, I'll just read it. As I want Rama to feel like we're answering his question. User complaint, even devs, because they feel UWP is not so mature, which is true. Web view, web notifications, mobile, and why does pull to refresh should only support list view? Why not others? Correct me if I'm wrong. He wants to know, is UWP mature and why?
So here, first of all, I think sometimes the definition of UWP is what they saw 2 years ago. Right. So yes, 2 years ago, it was less mature.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, we weren't as optimized for the desktop, and we weren't as optimized for the HoloLens. We were on a journey to go do that transformation. We didn't have a complete .NET set. Now we have a complete .NET API that is very, very rich. I talked to several customers who go, you know, I formed my initial opinion by the first time I saw UWP, but now I go back and look at it. It's a fairly complete platform where we've really rounded out all of those edges. And sometimes I feel like we're living in the past of where it was. And yes, it was new. We had lots of gaps. We had a lot of learning to go do. But right now, you're going to see a lot of the experiences that are built on top of UWP, all those things coming out of Microsoft. And we are pushing the edges of some of the most, greatest experiences I've seen with UWP. And so I feel like, my answer would be yes, please take a fresh look at it because it has matured a lot. Are there still gaps? Absolutely. Are there new needs? Absolutely. We're balancing filling gaps with attacking new needs and really making sure that we attack, like, there's no platform that really does what we're doing in Inc. I mean, like, there's just nothing out there. There's no platform I know of that does and provides so many capabilities. And I look at the competitors, I look at what they're trying to go do. So as far as, oh, look, it's got problems. Yeah, it's got problems in some places. Other places, we are leading the pack.
Right.
And we're enabling some of the most innovative experiences. So I'd say take a fresh look at it. You look at it now. Don't look at it 2 years ago or 3 years ago, about where the gaps were. Look at where we've actually been able to close them. And we'll continue to close them as fast as we can.
That's a really good answer, right? Because sometimes people will focus on what they saw 2 years ago. But we're still doing stuff, right? It feels like there's a lot of work.
I look at my parents do this to me. Sometimes I come home and they treat me like I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm not 18 years old. And why are you treating me? And then they're like, well, you're acting like that kid again. And they're like, no, I'm not. And we've all had that experience. That first time, especially the first time you go to college, you come home and they're like, well, you have a curfew. What? Yeah. Really? And I think you got to get out of the past and you got to look at where we really are and then give us concrete feedback on that.
Yeah. And so I think a great question, Rama, he's saying, go look at it again. If you feel the same way, tell us because we want to know.
Yeah. And show me and point that where you think the gaps are. We literally are attacking them as fast as we can attack them and working with the community to fill them in. Again, we're not thinking that we are the sole provider of solutions to developers. We think the community is, and we want to help lead and inspire the community to work together so that we all can build better applications.
All right, so we are running short on time. I want to get to these questions because they are important. With the move to 3D UIs, I have the feeling XAML is slowly losing ground to, for instance, Unity-built UIs. Are there any plans to make extensions to XAML to support true 3D content or maybe make hybrid apps?
I think it's actually quite an interesting question. We debate this inside too. When you think about building an immersive, let's say, high quality AAA experience for 3D, you're going to use a 3D toolkit. You've done that for games. I think you'll do that for many experiences. But if you think about the breadth experiences, and even what our competitors are thinking about in the augmented reality space, it's about incrementally going from 2D to 3D and mixing and blending the two together. Not everyone can go build a Unity experience. That takes a lot of design. It's a fully immersive. And so we're looking at how do we influence really, if you think about it, how we're talking about dimensionality in 3D and what we're doing with Paint 3D. We're trying to bring 3D and democratize it so that it's easy to access for even those who aren't experts at it. And so you can easily start to add it. So you'll see it adds more and more capability into XAML to integrate 2D and 3D content together and to expand into kind of the 3D world in a way that's approachable.
Sensible too, yeah.
For our customers. Because and there'll always be some, just like some games are all built with 3D technology in Unity and other ones are 2D type casual games. And we really want to make sure we blend the two and allow the two to mix together and you can kind of pick the right solution for what you're doing.
All right, well, we are about 2 minutes left and obviously I love all the questions. There's a ton of questions here that we'll save them and try to answer them for you later. When can we expect to have another community stand-up?
I think we try and schedule these like every month, but we'll have probably sometime after our developer days.
Yeah, and the developer day is kind of like a community stand-up, but we're going to show you more things. And that's in London. And the date, I have it written down right here, is October 10th.
5:30 p.m. in London and 9:30 a.m. Pacific.
Awesome. And then obviously Ignite is coming up September 25th, which is week after next.
Yep, very quickly. And if you're enterprise focused, please join us there. We'll have sessions and a lot of great content for our enterprise customers.
Fantastic. Where can people go to give feedback?
You can go to dev.windows.com. Mm-hmm.
And so dev.windows.com for any feedback. Again, we really appreciate you stopping by. Ton of good questions here from the community. It's always good to have Kevin Gallo here. Thanks so much for spending some time with us. My name is Seth Juarez, and you've been watching the Windows Community Stand-Up with Corporate Vice President of Developer Platform Team, Kevin Gallo. Thanks for watching.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.